Chris Bishop is the National Party spokesman for housing infrastructure and the RMA, as well as being the campaign chair. And Chris, I think you're one of the 25, 30-odd MPs who are also card-carrying members of the Taxpayers Union.
I am. I was one of the early members.
Thanks for joining Taxpayer Talk. So we've obviously just completed our nationwide Hands Off Our Homes Stop Central Planning Committees in relation to the replacement, or David Parker's replacement, to the Resource Management Act. The National Party recently came out and said that you would repeal the government's bills that are working through Parliament if they do go through before the election. What makes this worse, given that the National Party's been banging on about the need to reform the RMA for, well, nearly a generation?
Yeah, it's really disappointing what the government's come up with. And, you know, look, I think when David Parker said, you know, we're up for RMA reform, people said, okay, well, that's good. Finally, you've come around to the view of the National Party Act and many other commentators, and people were quite excited by that. But over the last 5 years, and this is extraordinary, he has managed to come up with something that's worse than what we have now. I don't think it was that, people didn't think it was possible, but he's definitely done it. And so the message is, we are up for RMA reform, but we're not up for this reform. We're only going to vote for something that will actually improve matters and move the dial. And this doesn't. In fact, it doubles down on the mistakes of the RMA. It makes it harder to get things done. It entrenches massive new bureaucracy in the system. It'll make it harder to build a wind farm and other renewable energy projects. And it's just a disaster. I call it the RMA 2.0. So it's just the RMA squared, basically.
I'll pick you up on the, you know, harder to build wind farms. The energy companies, it's amazing through the select committee submissions that often the corporate submissions are pretty bland, but a lot of them were saying this actually makes it near on impossible to achieve our goals of getting renewable energy infrastructure.
Yeah, Contact Energy said the single biggest barrier to decarbonisation of the New Zealand economy would be this bill. It's a direct quote from Contact Energy, and you're right. Some of the sort of corporates, you know, without being too pejorative about them, a little bit wishy-washy, but that was very direct. And I asked the Wind Energy guy directly, Wind Energy Association, will it be harder or easier to build a wind farm after this passes? He says it'll be harder. So, you know, on that litmus test, which we would have thought even the Greens and Labor would be in favour of, you know, it fails. And they've even made it worse during the committee process. That's the other thing, is that people haven't quite got their head around yet.
It's another 1,000 pages to work through.
Just go to Clause 3, which is the purpose clause, which is the operative clause of the RMA, and it's the operative clause of RMA 2.0. Everything is subordinate to the environment. So there's no balance in the new bill, as there is arguably under the current RMA. Everything depends on the health and life of the natural environment. Development is only allowed as long as it doesn't affect the environment, basically. In fact, it's even worse because it talks about this concept of te aranga o te tao, which is a te ao Māori concept around the sort of vitality of the natural environment. And
which can be defined in local areas by
correct. And the definition given in the bill is loose as a goose. And it will lead to extensive litigation. There's just no doubt about that. All of these matters are extensively litigated before the courts already, where the Chief Justice turned up and said, we're preparing for extensive litigation through the court process. And we are not wealthy enough as a country to go through another 20 years of everyone fighting over what words mean in the courts about doing things. You know, we have an existing body of case law under the RMA. Is it perfect? No. Do we want to improve it? Yes. But at least there's a sense at the moment that people know where they stand, that you can look at the jurisprudence, look at the case law and say, rightio, I can make business decisions, I can make planning decisions based around some level of certainty. Everything is thrown out with this new piece of legislation. It's going to be a nightmare, but people have not got their head around it yet.
The very things that we would complain about the RMA, the uncertainty, the cost and time, to think that we're now saying that's actually the pros of the RMA compared to...
It is a nightmare that the new Clause 3 is worse than what we have now. It is going to be horrific, and I think people are kind of, you know, people need to get their heads around just how bad it is. And that's why we've said, we've just got to throw it out. You know, we had a good look at it and said, because we had a lot of people saying to us, oh, well, you know, you should just take the good bits and the bad bits. But the problem is, it's actually too hard to do that. The fast track stuff is okay. There's some okay stuff around infrastructure. And as part of our package after the election, we might pick up a few of those ideas. But actually, the best thing to do, we've decided, is if Labor do ram it through by the election, is get in you know, win the election, hopefully, touch wood, and by Christmas, just literally a four clause repeal bill, get off the statute books. Send a very clear because
so that was along my list of questions. First 100 days?
Yeah, no, straight away by Christmas. By Christmas, because if it passes and we win the election on a mandate of repealing it, we'll consider ourselves to have a mandate to do it. And I think it's really important because if the bill passes, this 10-year transition window starts. You know, all of local government, you've got the National Planning Framework, MFE, an army of bureaucrats working away on this stuff right now. And they're all acting as if it's going to pass, and you know, the law firms are all issuing their guidance, and people are going to have to do this and that and the other thing. So it's just really important that we just put a stop to that straight away and say it's not happening. This dumb, massively bureaucratic, centralised system of control that will lead to worse outcomes for New Zealand, it's not happening. It's really important we send that message. If we win, it's gone. We're getting rid of it. It'll be off the statute books. And this long 10-year, extremely costly transition is not happening.
So we go back to the RMA. What does a better RMA or a National Party's alternative look like?
Yeah, so better RMA. So two things. Firstly, we are campaigning on a series of changes that we want to do to the existing RMA. 1-year consenting timeframes, for example, for major infrastructure projects and also renewable energy projects. A series of changes to the planning framework around renewable generation.
Is that just government-funded infrastructure, or is that...
No, everyone. In fact, you know, the electricity sector is all... I mean, it's large. I mean, you know, they've got mixed ownership companies, which are, you know, 51% government-owned, but, you know, Contact's 100% privately owned. So infrastructure will be, you know, a mixture. So across infrastructure and renewable energy, 1-year consenting timeframes. Obviously, we've announced some stuff around the zoning rules around housing for councils. The MDRS relaxing the requirements for that, so making it less one size fits all and more discretionary for councils. But also the requirement for councils to zone live zone 30 years of growth. Those require RMA changes. So those are policies we've announced. So some of the stuff we've already announced, and there's some stuff in agriculture as well. So some of the stuff we've already announced affects the existing RMA, and we will legislate for that, you know, over the course
of
our time.
That was my next question, because, I mean, the key English government spoke a lot about RMA reform, had a brief opportunity
after the 08,
nothing had been written and was unable to get it through.
Yeah.
What's your time frame on these changes? These sound all very, very good.
So just finish off what I was saying. So we'll legislate for those changes, but then we do want to kick off a substantive program of RMA reform, thoroughgoing reform of the Act. And we will outline what that looks like, you know, in the next, you know, between now and the election. But I can tell you and tell your listeners, it will be based on the concept of property rights, because the basis of a market economy and the basis of prosperity is a belief in private property rights and people making decisions based on private property and the sanctity of contract. And so that will be a foundation stone of reform. And we'll have more to say about that in due course.
Speaking of foundation stones, one of the common threads of the feedback we've had on our roadshows over the last few years has been this drive towards both centralisation and watering down democratic accountability. You mentioned planning, for example. I live in Auckland, and we've had a big brouhaha in my neighbourhood about how many stories and how close to the boundary our neighbours can build.
Yeah.
Now, one of the objections to RMA 2.0, or these central planning committees, is that they will be not only co-governed, but the representatives from the council are so far removed from the voters, there's effectively no accountability. My question for you, as the National Party infrastructure spokesperson in housing and RMA, is to what degree will we see the centralisation agenda? And what do you see both the role in terms of function, but the accountability mechanisms of local government?
Yeah, there's a lot to that question. Let me give you a sort of brief answer. I mean, the first point is that, and this is one of the reasons why we're opposed to the new RMA, is that you've got all of these things going on at the same time. You've got three waters happening at the same time as local government reform, at the same time as you've got RMA, and they don't line up at all. They're in different sequences, well, different contrary, times.
They do line up. They rip the guts out of local government. We had councillors on the roadshow, the regional councillor in Ashburton, get up and say, look, I don't think there's a role of, I can't see the regional council existing in a few years' time. You take, you know, what's the role of a regional council? Environmental planning. Well, this is all that. What's left even for city and district council?
Yeah.
Basically rubbish collection and picking library books on a Santa parade.
Yeah, well, I suppose what I mean is you've got 10 three waters entities. We had four, now we've got 10. There's 15 regional planning committees under the RMA. Local government commission's talking about, like, future local government stuff's talking about other reforms and stuff. It's all, it's higgledy-piggledy. It's all over the show. So I suppose my point would be you've got to decentralise power to the level at which it's best appropriately exercised. So, you know, you know, where parks go and sort of local services and stuff, you know, there's a role for local decision making around that, you know, local boards and things like that.
Democratically accountable?
Yeah, absolutely. But central government has legitimate public policy goals as well, one of which is housing affordability, for example, in which, because central government bears much of the consequences of housing unaffordability. We spend $4 billion a year as a government on housing subsidies, $1 million a day housing people in motels. That's all paid for by taxpayers. Mm. A lot of the reason for that is that councils have not allowed their cities to grow, both inside cities and outside cities. So in terms of where cities, and this is the subtle point, in terms of where and how cities grow, those are legitimate matters for local councils and local decision making. But the overall framework of growth, I think, can legitimately be set by central government. And so that's our policy, which is you've got to go for growth. You have to zone for growth. You can choose where and how, but then that's over to you, but you've got to grow. And that's the, and there's the tension. Of course there is, but you can work through those tensions. And the other thing that local government rightly says is that we need the funding tools to facilitate that growth, and we're up for that as well. And that's completely fair. And we're also going to change the incentives so that, because councils say, well, hang on, you know, we get all the downsides of growth, and you guys get all the upside. You get the gist, and you get the, you know, the tax take. So we're going to share the benefits of growth with councils through this fund we've set up called the Bill for Growth.
But you mentioned the Local Government Commission review work. I mean, some of that stuff is just, it's not just lowering the voting age and things like that.
Yeah.
It's sort of everything against democracy, but then the conclusion is basically co-governed citizens' assemblies, which I thought the best citizen assembly is actually democratically elected councils.
Yeah, well, we've got them. They're called councils.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's bizarre.
So you're not entertaining any of those?
Look, it's the future local government stuff. To be honest, I haven't had a really good substantive read. I think, frankly, some of it's just sort of ridiculous, and we're not going to be into that. But you know, we'll have a look at it after, you know, if we manage to win the election, we'll have a look at it. It's one of these things, but a lot of smart people have spent a lot of time on it, so we'll have a look at it. But I feel like they kind of skirted around the substantive issues and sort of focused on stuff that won't move the dial much.
You mentioned three waters too.
Yeah.
Is that gone in the first 100 days?
Yep, legislation in the first 100 days for sure. Yep, repeal and replace. So we're very clear on our three waters policy, which is
excellent policy.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, we worked hard on it, and credit to you guys and the Communities for Local Democracy for their spirited advocacy on it. So hand the assets back to local councils. Say to them, basically, you guys sort out how you do a bit of rationalisation and reorganisation of yourselves, but you own the assets, and you know, government's we'll give ourselves backstop powers to do it if we have to, but we don't want to. And then economic regulation, water quality regulation, and all of that stuff, which there's actually consensus on. But the key point is the removal of mandatory co-governance, which, as you know, is in the government's reforms, and they will not buckle on that. And then the other thing that I think people are wising up to is the extraordinary power of these Te Mana O Te Wai statements, which is in a funny, well, not funny, but in a interesting way, is they're worse than the co-governance aspects of the bill. Bills, plural. Because only Mana Whenua can issue Te Mana O Te Wai statements, and they're quite extraordinary in their scope and power And
they don't just have to be considered; they're binding.
Yeah, well, they have to be written into the plans and things like that. And only iwi can issue them. Only mana whenua can issue them. And shout out to Thomas Cranmer, who has done a lot of work exposing them. He's done a good job, and I think people are kind of wising up to it a bit.
You've covered RMA and Three Waters in the first 100 days. What else can New Zealanders expect if there is a change of government?
Oh, we'll have a 100-day plan, which we'll announce in due course. But I mean, honestly, there is so much stuff we have to change in this country. That this country is heading for banana republic territory unless we get back on track. We're now in this extraordinary situation. We've got the worst current account deficit in the OECD. Debt is rising. I think in 2 years' time, debt will be the fourth largest item in government expenditure.
Debt and interest more than law and order.
Yeah, more than law and order. Exactly right. I think it's superannuation, health, education, then debt. In a couple of years' time, we're in deficit. The tax takes just come out. We're down again. We haven't had a tax cut. Since 2010.
Indexation being first 100 days, you've committed,
we'll
the National Party's committed to that,
yep.
But the ACT Party have changed their position on indexation, for which we strongly disagree with and can't quite figure out why. You wouldn't use ACT as an excuse the thing is with indexation, and taxpayer groups find this around the world, that oppositions tend to promise it, and really it's the only sort of government that's really embedded it on both sides of the house is the Canadians.
Yeah. We'll announce our tax and fiscal plans in due course. I'm not going to do it on the Taxpayer Talk podcast, sorry. But and it's Nicola's and Christopher's announcement to make. But we're working away on that, and we'll have an announcement around that, obviously, before the election. So people will see our full tax and fiscal plans. You'll see our plans. But honestly, there is so much to do. I mean, we want to get rid of the fair pay agreements. We want to reverse the Bright Line test, bring back interest deductibility. We want to make some changes around farming regulations. Education is an area we haven't touched on, but is just in a disaster area at the moment. This 30-year experiment we've had on our children, competency-based learning, and we don't teach knowledge and facts anymore. And you can see the results of that in our results that are coming through. I mean, there's just so much to do. And we can't do it all at once. And so I think we're going to have to be upfront about that, because there's not enough house time for the stuff that requires legislation. Parliament doesn't sit all the time. But we will be very busy before Christmas. I can assure your listeners of that. There will be a lot of stuff done before Christmas if we manage to win the election.
So I see we've got 4 minutes left. Your National Party campaign chair, are you going to win the election?
We're cautiously optimistic. We're certainly working very hard. A lot of candidates and MPs around the country working very hard. I think things are trending in the right direction. So we're cautiously optimistic. We've got a lot of hard work to do.
The polls are very close, though. I mean, the Herald, it's a margin of error on our poll. The Herald poll of polls have Labour Greens still ahead. We've got, at least in my lifetime, more New Zealanders saying that New Zealand's headed in the wrong direction. How is this not a slam dunk?
Yeah, look, I think things are heading in the right direction for us. The polls bounce around a bit. We are cautiously optimistic, but it's going to be a close election, and the Labour Party is going to fight dirty and throw things at us over the next few weeks and months in the lead up to the election. So let's remember, every election under MMP is close. John Key and Bill English governed for 9 years, but they were close. Every election, the system's designed to be close. It's the way the system's designed. The last election's an outlier in that respect. So we will fight hard, but the future of our country depends on a change of government, in my view, and we will fight really hard for it.
As election campaigns progress, the sort of elevator pitch Winston's always the very best at it. He has 4 points that he says, he holds up 4 fingers and there's nothing else. But, of course, message discipline in an MMP environment where it's a lot more around party brand than individuals and individual constituencies.
Yep.
What will be the elevator pitch for New Zealanders to elect a Christopher Luxon government?
National will fix the economy to reduce the cost of living and let you keep more of what you earn with your own money. We will restore law and order and bring back consequences for behaviour. And we will improve health and education. But it's only by having a strong economy that you can make the needed investments in the health and education system that New Zealand desperately needs. And ultimately, it's all about fixing the economy, letting you keep more of what you earn, and going for economic growth.
Christopher, as long as that involves lower taxes, less waste, and more democratic accountability, wish you the best of luck.
Thanks Jordan. Taxpayer Talk. Appreciate it.